and around half their water drained out. So they don't have enough water stored up for their garden, and it'll die, Mr. Steiner says. She nodded as she ate her last bit of toast. She lit a cigarette. Isn't that terrible, Mom? David said. Sylvia said, and the Steiners want him to leave their water on just a little longer. We can't let their garden die. Remember all the trouble we had with our beets? And Mr. Steiner gave us that chemical from home that killed the beetles, and we were going to give them some of our beets, but we never did. We forgot. That was true. She recalled with a guilty start. We did promise them. And they've never said anything, even though they must remember. And David is always over there playing. Please go out and talk to the rider, David begged. She said, I guess we could give them some of our water later on in the month. We could run a hose over to their garden. But I don't believe them about the leak. They always want more than their share. I know, David said, hanging his head. They don't deserve more, David. No one does. They just don't know how to keep their property going right, David said. Mr. Steiner, he doesn't know anything about tools. Then that's their responsibility. She felt irritable, and it occurred to her that she was not fully awake. She needed a Dexamil, or her eyes would never be open, not until it was nightfall once more and time for another phenobarbital. Going to the medicine cabinet in the bathroom, she got down the bottle of small green heart-shaped pills, opened it, and counted. She had only 23 left, and soon she would have to board the big tractor bus and cross the desert to town to visit the pharmacy for a refill. From above her head came a noisy, echoing gurgle. The tank on the roof, their huge tin water storage tank, had begun to fill. The ditch rider had finished switching the sluice gate. The pleas of the Steiners had been in vain. Feeling more and more guilty, she filled a glass with water in order to take her morning pill. If only Jack were home more, she said to herself. It's so empty around here. It's a form of barbarism, this pettiness we're reduced to. What's the point of all this bickering and tension, this terrible concern over each drop of water that dominates our lives? There should be something more. We were promised so much in the beginning. Loudly, from a nearby house, the racket of a radio blared up suddenly. Dance music, and then an announcer giving a commercial for some sort of farm machinery. Depth and angle of the furrow, the voice declared, echoing in the cold, bright morning air. Preset and self-adjusting, so that even the most unskilled owner can, almost the first time. Dance music returned. The people had turned to a different station. The squabble of children rose up. Is it going to be like this all day? She asked herself, wondering if she could face it. And Jack, away until the weekend at his job, it was almost like not being married, like not having a man. Did I emigrate from Earth for this? She clapped her hands to her ears, trying to shut out the noise of radios and children. I ought to be back in bed. That's where I belong, she thought, as she at last resumed dressing for the day which lay ahead of her. In his employer's office in downtown Bunchwood Park, Jack Boland talked on the radio telephone to his father in New York City. The contact, made through a system of satellites over millions of miles of space, was none too good as always, but Leo Boland was paying for the call. "What do you mean the Franklin D. Roosevelt Mountains?" Jack said loudly. "You must be mistaken, Dad. There's nothing there. It's a total waste area. Anybody in real estate can tell you that." His father's faint voice came. "No, Jack, I believe it's sound. I want to come out and have a look and discuss it with you. How's Sylvia and the boy?" "Fine," Jack said. "But listen, don't commit yourself, because it's a known fact that any Mars real estate away from the part of the canal network that works, and remember that only about one-tenth of it works, comes close to being an outright fraud." He could not understand how his father, with his years of business experience, especially in investments in unimproved land, could have gotten onto such a bum steer. It frightened him. Maybe his dad, in the years since he had seen him, had gotten old. Letters told very little. His dad dictated them to one of his company stenographers. Or perhaps time flowed differently on Earth than on Mars. He had read an article in a psychology journal suggesting that. His father would arrive a tottering, white-haired old relic. Was there any way to get out of the visit? David would be glad to see his grandfather, and Sylvia liked him, too. In Jack Boland's ear, the faint, distant voice related news of New York City, none of any interest. It was unreal to Jack. A decade ago, he had made a terrific effort to detach it.